So several of you asked me this morning or asked me last Sunday about my trip that I recently took. I took a trip to Yellowstone and to the Grand Teton. So we were staying out in Montana. And Susan calls these sort of trips that I do boondoggles. Like, that's her name for them when I go with other pastors and I go to really cool places like that. But it was a really sweet gig. We went out and we stayed in this camp in the middle of mountains in Montana. And each day we would drive into Yellowstone. And we saw really beautiful things. Like, we saw mammoth, which is this picture right here. That's cold water and then hot, like molten water coming down into it. And the beauty of that experience. And then we went to a place called Grand Prismatic, which is, you see those different colors in that picture? Those are all colors based on the heat of the water. So the different heat of the water is different experiences. And then we went to the Tetons. And in my opinion, the Tetons are the most incredible, most beautiful thing I've ever seen. You see, the mountains are kind of blue. They're blue mountains with water that comes up to them. It's about 80 degrees where we are, and that's snow on the top of the mountains, all in the same place. I find that creation is really good for me. And a few years ago, I had this dream where I said, I want to get some pastors together and I want to take them out to a place, to an ecosystem that's constantly been changing, that's been morphing, but people have been measuring and watching. And to see what things like the reintroduction of wolves, which happened in the 90s in Yellowstone, do to that system. And what I wanted to do was I wanted to take a group of pastors and say, now think about the church and think about all these things that are introduced into this system and what's happening to it. So I took 11 other pastors with me, and we went out and we met with a professor of ecology at MSU. We met with a pastor who's in this area, and we met with a rancher because we wanted to understand what do ranchers think about the reintroduction of wolves. They don't like it, just to let you know. They're not a big fan. But we left having actually more hope for the church. I'll be honest, when we first got there, we kept talking about the super volcano in Yellowstone and saying, there's a lot of connection to the church with that, right? This thing's going to implode at any point in time. It was really a great trip, and it was great to be with pastors, but there was a part of the trip that was really important to me. I took my running stuff. I'm a little bit of a runner, and I enjoy running. And there was another guy on the trip named David, and David said, I run every day. And I said, well, I don't usually run every day, but if you wake me up, I'll run with you. So at 5:45 every morning, we would get up. There was no heat in the cabins. We had a wood stove, but by the morning, there was nothing left. And it was about 35 degrees when we'd get up to run. And David and I would get up, and we'd run together, and we'd start off, and it was pitch dark, except you could see this little line over the mountains. And as we would run each morning, and it was my favorite part of the time, we'd have good conversation and things like that, but you'd start to see the sun come up just over the mountains. There is nothing more peaceful to me than watching the sun either come up over the mountains or over the water. Have you had that experience? To watch it rise. I mean, most of the time when we're at the beach or we're in the mountains, we're not up early enough. But to watch the sun pierce the darkness, to come up over and then show the outline of creation. I mean, that's what the sun does for me. It really reveals the outline of creation. And I sat there, and I would stop him each morning. He hated this in the middle of our run, and I'd say, just stop. Just look. Look at the sun that is broken through the darkness. The peace that it would bring me in that moment. Do you know, in those moments, I forgot about everything else. I'd forget about how much I had to drive that day because I was driving the team. I'd forget about the possibilities of our schedule getting messed up. I'd forget about every single thing except the sun coming up over the mountains. I really thought about peace a lot last week. I want to be a person of peace. I want to have peace. Do you guys want peace in your life? I want peace in my life. And I want to be a person that brings peace to everybody else. Now, I will also add that it didn't hurt that we had very little to no access to any sort of Wi-Fi or signal the whole time we were there. It was funny, though, to watch a group of pastors every time you get in a place where it's like, ding, 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 and everybody's like, we're not talking to each other anymore, right? We've got service for just a minute. But peace. I found myself in a place of peace, and I realize I long for it. I want more of it. We've been in this sermon series now for 3 weeks. This is week number 4, called Be the Change. where we're talking about heading into this election season specifically, but we're talking about the discourse that's going on in our world today. The discourse in relationships where I think incivility is at an all-time high, where I think people say things to each other without caring. It is really beautiful, Caitlin, to have somebody get up and say, here's a way that we can be in relationship together. Wouldn't your relationships be easier if everybody said that? Right? If people just came up and said, hey, I know things are awkward and hard between us, but let's make it easy. It helps me if we can be in relationship if. So we've been spending time in this series thinking about ways that we can be in conversation with one another, ways that we can build relationships with one another. And I think so much of this series I've been focusing on what we say, but I think so much of it is about how we approach things even more than what we say. It's not just about saying the right words. It's about coming to something with the right perspective. My experience is that many times I don't show up to a relationship and a conversation willing and ready for that relationship. Many times I'm bringing my own stuff. As Amy just said, we're looking at the Beatitudes, a sermon that Jesus gave, which is probably the best sermon that was ever given. The Sermon on the Mount to a group of people where Jesus took everything people thought in society and completely turned it upside down. And we're going to keep looking at that this morning. The next verse in that line says, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called children of God. Now, I have to tell you, when I read this week, I started laughing because I thought it was really funny that Jesus linked children with peace. I have three of those things in my home, and there is very little peace when they're all three there. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be children of God. And I thought, there is never a moment of quiet in our home. If that's what I equate peace to, then children are not peacemakers. And then I thought about it, and I sat down, and I said, why would Jesus say, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be children of God? Why link those two things? Because Jesus doesn't, in all the rest, go through, for they shall be children of God. Why is this link happening? And I thought about kids. And I thought about kids in our culture. Now, don't think about middle schoolers. Go back a little bit. But think about children. Think about kids when they're in preschool and how they interact with one another. Think about how often when they're in preschool, they're worried about someone's name or the color of their skin or their background or their wealth or their different socioeconomic status or where they come from. I mean, I think about my children who are still in elementary school. They have all different kinds of friends. And rarely are their friends the same as they were last week. Because they have new friends. And it's not that they've dropped those people, but they're starting to talk about new people. So they're building these peaceful relationships across all these boundaries that the world seems to set. And then something happens in middle school. And I believe it actually goes through much of the rest of our lives. I don't actually think that's one of the things that we come back around on. But we have these divisions that happen in our relationships. So I think it's really beautiful that Jesus says, blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Maybe, just maybe, Jesus was on to something. Maybe, I was thinking this week, maybe if I'm going back to this children example, maybe the antonym for peace is judgment. We don't get peace if we're judging people. And then I thought, well, maybe I'll take it a step further. Maybe the antonym for peace is anger. When I come at something with anger, or when I approach a conversation with anger, I am already not a peaceful person. Would you agree? The second anger seems to enter me, I am not a person of peace. I think that having an angry spirit is something that's really a problem in our culture today. And if I am being honest, if I'm being really honest with you this morning, peace is something I'm rarely thinking about when I'm in a heated discussion. When I'm in a heated discussion with somebody over something that I vehemently disagree with, I don't go, well, what's the peaceful outcome here? I think I'm in a place where I'm going, how am I going to win this conversation? How am I going to show them that I am right? How am I going to just get them to fully understand my side? Because once they do, all will be well in their lives. If they just get me. Y'all, I think we have an anger problem in our culture today. I think we have an anger issue. Last week, I was driving Nathan, who is our middle child, to his swim practice. And I turned off the Fairfax County Parkway onto Sunset Hills. And we got off there, and you have to make the 3-lane over right there by the Target just to get into the Y where he swims. And it's a really hard thing during rush hour. And I got there, and I just kind of waited because I said, there's no way I can make it over. And I waited, and this guy behind me is just laying on his horn. I mean laying on it. Not like beep, beep. I mean, it's like there are no brakes in this horn. And Nathan's kind of looking at me kind of nervous. Dad, what's going on? What's going on? And finally we get over, and then the guy does this really delightful thing. He rolls down his window, and he gives us this symbol. I don't know if you've ever seen it. I'm not going to do it for you this morning, but Nathan looks at me, and he goes, Dad, what's wrong with that guy? What's going on with that guy? My 9-year-old doesn't understand why somebody can't wait literally 30 seconds to get to the Target. I mean, I know they have good stuff, but come on. And my son Nathan says, Dad, what's wrong with that guy? Guys, according to a new study by AAA Foundation for Traffic Safety, 80% of us have road rage. 80% of people have road rage. Over 8 million people admitted. Over 8 million drivers admitted to engaging in extreme examples of road rage, including purposefully, get this, ramming another vehicle. Or getting out of the car to confront another driver. Here are things that people admitted to doing. 51% of people purposefully tailgate. It sends a great message, doesn't it? Just ride on that bumper. 51%. Yelling at another driver, 47%. Honking to show annoyance or anger, 45%. Making angry gestures, 33%. And I know one of the people that made that cut, right? 33%. Trying to block another vehicle from changing lanes, 24%. Y'all, we have a real problem. We have a real problem. One of the researchers concluded this. They said, inconsiderate driving, bad traffic, and the daily stresses of life can transform minor frustrations into dangerous road rage. Dangerous. I mean, this is a real issue. When you drive down the roads now, do you see the signs sometimes that are blinking that say, road rage kills people? It's bad. Road rage is a real thing. Now, I think we've taken it a step further. I don't think that it just happens on the road. I think rage now happens in our homes. It happens in our neighborhoods. It happens in our community meetings. It happens in our schools. It happens at work. And I've coined this new phrase called relationship rage. Look it up. It's a real thing. But I think relationship rage is a real issue. Anger is a real problem in our relationships and in our culture today. I think people get so heated that we get to anger more quickly than we get to peace. When we don't agree on some political, social, or religious, or media hot topic, we get angry. And I think relationship rage is killing us. I think it's killing our relationship with other people. I think it's killing conversations. And it's getting us to that same question where we look at people that Nathan asked me and we say, what's wrong with that person? How many times recently have you thought that as you've been in a conversation with somebody? What's wrong with that person? Why don't they get it? Now, friends, anger is not new. It's something Jesus talked about a lot. There are a lot of conversations we have in the church where we talk about things that Jesus talked about. But do you know, anger is one of the things that he talked about almost more than anything else. He said, deal with your anger. But it's not something that's new to just Jesus. I mean, you can go back to the beginning of time and read story after story of anger. There's a story that many children learn when they're growing up. It's a story about this prophet named Jonah. And a prophet was just somebody that had to give the hard news that God wanted to give to other people. And God comes to Jonah and he says, hey, I need you to go tell these people who are really in a bad place that they need to turn around and stop doing what they're doing. These people called the Ninevites. or there's going to be destruction in their community. And Jonah runs because he doesn't want to do it. He doesn't like the Ninevites, so he runs in the other direction. And then he ends up in the belly of this big fish, and then he gets spat out, and then he finally goes to the Ninevites to tell them what's going on. And this is what happens. I'm going to read it to you very quickly this morning. It says, the word of the Lord came to Jonah a second time after he was out of the belly of the big fish. It says, go to the great city of Nineveh and proclaim to it the message I give you. This time, Jonah obeyed the word of the Lord and went to Nineveh. Now, Nineveh was a very large city. It took 3 days to go through it. Jonah began by going a day's journey into the city, proclaiming, 40 more days and Nineveh will be overthrown. The Ninevites believed God. A fast was proclaimed, and all of them, from the greatest to the least, put on sackcloth. That was a symbol of repentance, a symbol of let me take off my other ornate things and put on this to say what I have done. When Jonah's warning reached the king of Nineveh, he rose from his throne, took off his royal robes, covered himself with sackcloth, and sat down in the dust. This is the proclamation he issued in Nineveh. The king said, by the decree of the king and his nobles, do not let people or animals, herds or flocks taste anything. Do not let them eat or drink, but let people and animals be covered with sackcloth. Let everyone who call urgently on God, let them give up their evil ways and their violence. Who knows? God may yet relent and with compassion turn from fierce anger so that we will not perish. And when God saw that what they did and how they turned from their evil ways, he relented and did not bring on them the destruction he had threatened. I mean, this is good news for the people, right? They said, God, we're sorry. They turned away from their stuff. And then God didn't destroy them. Interesting thought, huh? Jonah really hated them, though. And he was upset by this reality that God didn't destroy them, because the first verse in the next chapter says this, but to Jonah this seemed very wrong and he became angry. I mean, we read this story and we're like, this is ridiculous. Right? These people stopped doing bad things to hurt each other. They stopped forcing pain on other people. They turned away from it. They repented. And what happens to Jonah? He gets angry. See, God wanted to use Jonah as a person of peace, and he goes straight to anger. He showed up ready for God to demolish them. I mean, take a moment and be honest here. How many times have you seen somebody have road rage around you, and you hope just somewhere up north there's a cop ready to pull them over when they get up there? Or maybe if you see them pulled over a little later, you go, that's right. You got what you deserved. That's what Jonah wanted. He wanted the people to get what they deserved. They had done bad things, and God should have punished them. He wanted justice, but he forgot about this concept of peace in the meantime. I think in a lot of my conversations, I want justice, and I forget about peace. I think in a lot of my conversations, I forget what God may want to do. I want to end with us thinking this morning about how many of our conversations and relationships are struggling because we get angry. Because we get angry at people because what they're doing we think must be an unjust thing and they deserve to be punished. They're wrong. We're right. They're not in the right place. Three things I learned from reading Jonah's story that I want to leave you with this morning. One is we actually need to have hope for the success for others. Jonah went to Nineveh hoping they would be destroyed, right? If I've got to go, I hope they'll be destroyed. What would happen if in our conversation and in our dialogues we actually hoped that good things would come to people that we disagree with? That shifts our conversation. Here's the second thing. We ought to think before we act on our emotions. I've heard it said before, wait 24 hours before responding to that email. We should all do that before we respond to any angry email. Wait 24 hours before doing it. What would have happened to Jonah if instead of running, he simply said, all right, let me think about this for a day. Maybe I'll respond to what God's calling me. Maybe he wouldn't have ended up in the belly of the fish. Think before we act on our emotion, especially if that emotion is anger. And here's the last thing. Enjoy the company of people for who they are, not for what they've done. Enjoy the company of people for who they are, not for what they've done. Had Jonah loved the people of Nineveh simply because they were children of God, not based on the charges that God had against them, I believe it would have been a different scenario. We must become people of relationship repair, not relationship rage. Friends, we have a charge for those of us who call ourselves Christians, people of faith, to be people of peace. We have a charge to start bringing peace back into our relationships, and I think that starts more with me than it does with the other person. I must approach the conversation with peace. So I want you to think this morning, are you a person who brings light, like the light that I saw each morning over the mountains, into the darkness of a conversation and a darkness of a relationship? Or are you a person who regularly takes a hammer and knocks the light back down and says, you know what? In the midst of the darkness, I can still be angry with you. In the midst of the darkness, you might not see me for who I am, because in the midst of the darkness, I don't have to bring light, because what God calls us to do is to bring light in the world. And I pray that our anger doesn't take that over.